Howdy do, buckaroos. This is the Mac Observer Daily Observations Podcast for Wednesday, December 5th, 2018. With me today is Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Kelly. Happy hump day.
You know, I worry about Wednesdays because I'm always like, somewhere out there, somebody named Mike is still getting hassled about their commercial. Also with me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Now, the first thing I want to talk about with people today, with both of you today, is a way to give somebody a gift that is thoughtful and useful, but saves you having to go to a store, saves you having to ship things and either meet deadlines or try to travel with something that might be gift wrapped, or you know, or try to get something through the TSA. And that is charitable giving. So loads and loads of organizations have ways that you can donate in someone else's name, and what that and that entails a certain something for that person. The first one that comes to my mind, we were talking about this earlier today, the first one that comes to my mind, obviously, is App Camp for Girls, which is an organization I've been involved with since 2013. And so full disclosure, I'm a founding volunteer of App Camp for Girls, and we've talked about it on the show. I've talked about it with John on Background Mode. It's an organization that, that means an awful lot to me. You can go to
Gina Donald has been on Background Mode.
Yes, Gina also has been on Background Mode to talk about it. And what we do is we teach iOS development to girls who are going into 8th and 9th grade. And at the end of the week, they have a fully functioning iOS app. And at the end of the summer, we publish those apps in the App Store. So every kid who attends camp becomes a developer. And becomes a published developer in the App Store and has an app available for you to go and download. So you can go to the donation page at appcampnumber4girls.org/donate. And you can donate in the name of someone. You can donate on behalf of someone. And I know other organizations have similar sorts of in the name ofs as well. There's lots of places that will let you give donations, like the Red Cross. If you are a political person, you may want to donate to something like the ACLU or the Brady Center for Gun Control are the first two that I think of. I've donated to the Kind Fund through UNICEF that stands for Kids in Need of Desks, and you buy desks to get kids in schools in Malawi up off the floor so that they're not sitting on the floor when they go to school. They actually are sitting at a desk, and I've donated to that in the name of my parents, because like my parents have enough stuff, and honestly my mom didn't need another thing to dust. And as a teacher, my mom has a soft spot for organizations that do stuff for education, and that was one that she really liked, so that went over very well. John, I'd like to ask you, have you done like donations to places for people instead of giving, and what were those places? Let's give some shout outs to some charities.
Typically,
here,
when there is a national disaster, Apple puts up a link to the Red Cross.
Yes.
And it's very convenient. You just click and it's charged to your Apple ID and you get an email receipt. Mm-hmm. So it's very easy to do, and I highly recommend it. When there's a national need, look for that Red Cross on Apple's homepage.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one, but that one I don't know that you can do in someone else's name if you were going to do that as a gift. I know you can go to the Red Cross's website and do that, but yeah, if you just feel a need to donate, I know that you can do that. Andrew, how about you? Do you ever do donations instead of gifts for people?
Actually, I haven't. I mean, I do the same thing like John does, where I donate to things that Apple puts on the website, but mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever done anything on someone else's behalf.
Oh, okay. Well, I can tell you that at least through the years, as I have done this sort of thing, like, you know, somebody that I know works a lot with a particular organization or things like that. Like, you know, I have good friends who spend a lot of time at the Humane Society, for example. Here, it's a nonprofit that does a lot of stuff with volunteers. So I've donated to the Humane Society for that person, you know, as their Christmas gift. So, part of what I have liked about that is the opportunity to give somebody something that might be a little bit more meaningful. Like, you know, it's nice to get a phone charger or a thing like that. But, you know, if you've kind of, particularly like family members, if you've been buying them gifts for a lot of years, you know, I have had that moment of like, wait, I bought you this, but like I was about to give a Christmas gift and it was something I had already purchased for that person or something very similar to it, like, you know, a couple of years before. Oh, no. You know, I thought that
I have, along those lines, I have developed a changing Christmas gift philosophy over the years.
Yes.
As you mentioned, dust. there are things that you buy people that just sit in a drawer afterwards and, mm-hmm. or sit on the bookcase or on the fireplace mantle and just sit there.
Yes.
So my wife and I have gotten into more of the mode of purchasing gifts for good friends or things that are consumables. Things mm-hmm. that will be used up, like
yes.
food and scotch.
Ooh, yes. Yes. Stay tuned after the show for John's podcast, Scotch for the Holiday. yeah, I would listen to that show. Yes, mostly because I want to know if I have the right kind of scotch in the bar right now, or if perhaps I need to upgrade.
McAllen 18, that's all you need to know.
Okay, that one. That one's down there, so I think I'm good. yeah, maybe there's
Return
a new podcast.
From sub-routine.
Yeah, maybe there's a new podcast to be done, to be mined there. Cocktails with the Mac Observer. All right, so Andrew, what's your general gift giving philosophy? I like John's consumable idea. We've moved to a little bit more of that. In my house as well. So how about you, Andrew?
It's not really a policy per se, but just to make it easier and everyone involved, I just give my family money and they do the same to me. And that way we can just go buy whatever we want.
That's another way to do it.
Andrew, I'm looking forward to your Christmas present.
Yes. Let me make sure you have my address correct. We've done some of that, and then on a few occasions, what we've done with various iterations of family is put all that money together, and then like everyone goes out to dinner, or you know, depending on the scale, like you know, everybody like takes a trip, and while we are all in the same place, like everybody goes out and has one dinner together, and then you know, can peel off and do whatever else they want to do the rest of the time, but. Something that's a little bit more, like John said, you know, a consumable, like something a little more experience oriented or consume, you know, like get a good bottle of something that does.
There are some websites that delve into gourmet breads and gourmet cookies and chocolates that are
yeah.
always fun. Yeah.
And the one thing that I like doing with that is local stuff. So I try to find, whether I'm giving gifts to another person here in Portland or if it's a gift to somebody who lives someplace else, I will try to find like an interesting place where the recipient lives and get them something from there. Like, here's a really awesome bakery near Brian Chaffin's house, for example. So I know that if it goes over well, like he can go to the source and get more of whatever that was really good. So, that I also enjoy doing, like, you know, a gift certificate or something like near where the person lives. And then always, as with most things, particularly if you don't need to get the physical card or a physical receipt or anything like that, then this helps you save on shipping deadlines. This helps you save on having to mail something, you know, having to put something in the mail in the first place, whether it's, you know, you just have to go out to your mailbox or you have to actually go to the post office, like saves you, you know, in time, saves you all that hassle. If you're traveling, you know, just being able to even print when you get where you're going, print a few of these out and maybe put them in a Christmas card and give them to somebody, like that's still a whole lot easier than trying to travel with a bunch of awkward shaped items in your suitcase that are just going to get you hassled by TSA. So,
right. Or confiscated.
Or just taken away. Yeah. Which has happened to a gift of mine, I can tell you. Something that I was supposed to get that almost didn't make it to me. And anyway, so yeah, it's an interesting story for another day. But hopefully we've given you some ideas. And if you have ideas for charities that you think would also benefit from a little bit of attention, we would like to get those, and I will be happy to highlight those on our show as well. You can get in touch with us at Twitter, on Twitter, where we are TMO Daily, and you can also email observations@macobserver.com, or you can just leave a comment in the show notes. And the one thing I will tell you, for the App Camp for Girls donations, if you donate and you put in there that you heard about it on this show and that you heard about it from me, I can promise you that you will receive something special from App Camp in the mail. So there you go. What I would like to do now is move on to our sponsors. And our first sponsor is Ops Genie. Incidents with your technology are inevitable. Some are planned, some are unplanned. Getting timely alerts in those situations is critical. And that's why there's Ops Genie by Atlassian. Ops Genie empowers dev teams and ops teams to plan for service disruptions, helps them stay in control during unplanned incidents, and helps keep everything running smoothly during the planned ones. So everybody on the appropriate team has the power to respond quickly and efficiently because those service alerts are coming from integrations that Ops Genie has with things like Jira and New Relic and loads more. So you can go to opsgenie.com, OPSGENIE.com. And if you head there today, you can sign up for a free company account and add up to 5 team members. Our other sponsor today is Jamf Now, and Jamf helps you set up, manage, and protect Apple devices on demand. So if you're a person who's headed home into tech during tech support season, you can make sure that you're managing everybody's Macs and iPhones and iPads, and you will have all of that information instead of having to try to interrogate somebody to get information out of them about what device it is they have or what version of anything it's running. You can have access to all of that from wherever you are. You log into a web dashboard. You can look at all your devices there. You can see the version of operating system. You can see the serial number for the device, the model. You can manage a certain number of settings on the device. Setting it up is a piece of cake. You can support 3 devices. Excuse me. You get 3 devices for free forever. And additional devices are $2 a month. So if you head over to the Jamf website at jamf.com/TDO, you can sign up for a free account today and get started with all of that. And then when you are visiting your family, you can get everyone set up and you can make your life easier the whole rest of next year. The other thing I wanted to talk to both of you about today, but mostly John, is HDR. Because, John, you have a piece talking about how there are a number of flavors of HDR, and your piece came with a handy graphic.
Yeah, just one of many. I've been corresponding with Yuri Getskins in Europe, and he's a former Philips engineer and very knowledgeable about high dynamic range. Mm-hmm. For those listeners who are not quite sure, high dynamic range is different in video than on photography, and it requires a special kind of TV system that supports 10-bit color and has the technical capacity to change its brightness dramatically and contrast dramatically to match what's called metadata that's delivered along with the video. And so you can, in the case of Dolby Vision, for example, scene by scene, change the brightness and the contrast.
Okay.
To bring out better visibility, say, of dark scenes. If you ever watched on a standard TV set night scenes, sometimes it's almost imperceptible to see what's going on. You have to crank the brightness way up.
Mm-hmm. I watch a lot of movies set in space, so I know of what you speak.
Right. And so high dynamic range is a way of elegantly handling that. And there's several different flavors. And so
I want to ask you a couple of sort of amateur questions, I guess, on this. First of all, this is something when you're talking about this in particular, what you're talking about is what TVs support with regard to HDR, correct?
For example, yes.
Okay.
A very popular
because there's a jigsaw puzzle of TVs and things that you hook to TVs that make this work.
That's exactly right. And that's the whole purpose of these diagrams that Yuri has developed, so that you can go in and you can look at the TV that you may have in mind for your 4K system, and then look at the media player that you have in mind, whether it's a Roku or Amazon Fire Stick or a Chromecast or an Apple TV or an Xbox. And then look at the streaming services that you either subscribe to or want to subscribe to in order to get 4K content.
Okay.
And those also have to be all have to be gracefully married to make sure that the HDR that you favor or want to work with can percolate all the way through the streaming service, through your peripheral, and onto the TV screen and actually work.
Now, next question. What if it's not? What if my TV doesn't support it, or I have an older device that knows nothing of HDR, and I hook that to a TV that has some sort of HDR capability? What am I looking at there?
The TV will ignore it.
Okay.
If the TV is not set up to handle a version of HDR, then it just doesn't know what to do with the metadata, and it will just throw it away.
Okay.
And it'll be
so,
just plain old high definition.
Okay, that was my next question. So what will I see if that's what's happening? For example, I'm pretty sure that my Blu-ray player, for example, knows nothing of HDR, even though it's possible that... And I'm using this example because this is very relevant to my interest. I just got the Westworld Season 2 box set in the mail. Thank you to my other podcast host, Don Melton, who sent it to me for my birthday. And cool. If I want to put those in and play them, I know that I bought my Blu-ray player a few years ago, so it probably doesn't speak HDR. It's possible the discs do, but if my player doesn't, whether my TV does or not, none of that's going to matter. I'm going to get... air quote, regular Blu-ray quality out of these?
That's right. It's going to be ordinary 1080p. And deliver 1080p to your TV, and the TV will be none the wiser.
So, Andrew, do you remember a time when 1080p was the thing that blew people away when they were looking at televisions?
Yeah, actually, I do remember that.
And so do I. It was about 3 years ago.
It took this weird sort of journey where it went from 1080p to Blu-ray, and then to, like, plasma TVs, which are, like, apparently dead now. And then I think
more
another thing before we arrived at what we have now.
Well, there was the brief dalliance sideways into 3D TV.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, it was that one. And, you know, again, listeners, if this is you, please tell me, because I literally know nobody with a 3D television and the capability of showing 3D content on that television who does so regularly, aside from, hey, didn't I hear you had a 3D TV? Yeah, let me show you it. And then that's all.
I think the last 3D TV was manufactured in either late 16 or early 17. I'm not sure. But most TV, I don't think there's any TV maker now today who's shipping their new TVs with 3D capability at all.
Right.
It's dead. It's gone.
But if people are doing that, I would really like to hear about it, because I don't know anyone who does it beyond, yeah, look, isn't it neat? Now let's go back to watching regular television. So that's why I was asking.
One thing you should know is that high dynamic range could be applied to high definition, but the industry has elected not to do so.
Okay. So if I
ever see it on high def.
Suppose I want to buy somebody an Apple TV for Christmas, and I get them the 4K Apple TV, then what is the HDR situation there?
The streaming service will interrogate the Apple TV and find out what it can receive. So, for example, the Apple TV advertises, hey, I'm able to receive HDR 10 and Dolby Vision.
Okay.
Netflix.
So HDR 10, you said.
Yeah, HDR 10 is okay. High dynamic range, but it's static metadata. It defines how bright the show will be and the contrast at the beginning of the show, and nothing changes. In Dolby Vision, you get contrast and brightness changes on a scene by scene basis.
Okay.
So it's more sophisticated.
But I'm trying, when people are going and looking, like, I'm trying to help determine what the Apple TV will support. So
well, there's handshaking going on. So, for example, if the Apple TV is on the internet and it's connected to Netflix or Amazon, Amazon will detect that it can receive Dolby Vision, and Dolby Vision will be delivered to the Apple TV or HDR10.
Okay.
Depending on the source material. There's right. a lot of source material that's HDR10. There's some that's Dolby Vision, and you can see that in the placard for the show that you look at when you select it. There'll be some Dolby Digital 5.1 4K TV or HDR version Dolby Vision. If it's Dolby Vision, it's automatically 4K, so they don't do a redundant labeling. So okay. far, so good. Now, your Apple TV has it. Mm-hmm. Question is, can it deliver it to the TV? So now the TV has to advertise to the Apple TV what it can absorb.
Uh-huh.
And if the handshaking for Dolby Vision is set, then the Apple TV says, okay, I'm getting Dolby Vision from Netflix. I can send it to you. And the TV says, send it on. I got it. But if the TV is, say, not capable of Dolby Vision, then the Apple TV will say, well, can you do HDR10?
Okay.
Static metadata, and will gracefully default back to it. And the TV says, okay, I'll take that. And if the TV is not a 4K TV of any kind, but high-definition TV only, then the Apple TV will simply deliver a 1080p picture.
Okay. So with the Apple TV, we know. And then is it... I know that you have a diagram in the piece that you wrote. So
just one. Just Yuri has done eight.
One.
Because what happened was is that the one he had got too complicated. And it was hard to read. And you have to kind of, you know, sit there and stare at it. And you have to kind of do a system design by, you know, digesting what's on the diagram. And say you're just a big fan of LG TVs, then you look on the diagram for TVs, what the LG TVs support in terms of HDR. And then, of course, the LGs support HDR10 and Dolby Vision. And then you say, okay, so I want to make sure my peripheral that I buy supports those two.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go to the peripheral diagram, which I didn't publish. I didn't publish all eight. I only published the first one.
Okay.
So you go to the article that I linked to, and you look at the different Venn diagrams and kind of wade your way through it until you mm-hmm. have a consistent flow.
Okay.
And make sure everything works. Now, in 2017, there were some firmware updates that were required to make everything work. But by now, Christmas of 2018, everybody's got their HDR act together, and you sure. can be pretty confident. Except okay. for the Blu-ray players. That's a whole different issue. I wouldn't recommend buying a Blu-ray player with Dolby Vision support yet.
Okay.
And that's a whole other story in another article.
And hopefully another diagram.
Yeah, he doesn't have Blu-ray players on there, but he's got some stuff to say about the state of the industry. The industry, okay. just as a side note, in Yuri's opinion, and I think I kind of agree with him, the focus has been on streaming.
Yes.
And a lot of movies are available in Dolby Vision streaming that are not yet available on plastic
mm-hmm.
in 4K Blu-ray format with Dolby Vision support, and then a player that supports that. And it's been theorized that perhaps the industry is more focused on getting you to pay for a movie every time you watch it as opposed to buying it on plastic and having it forever.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. As I sit here with a wall of DVDs behind me. I'm interested to find out when the players start supporting that, because I'm sure I have stuff that will just start magically looking better if I just buy a new DVD player at some point
in 2018,
Blu-ray player in the future.
With the situation settled out, I believe there's a Sony and Panasonic
mm-hmm.
4K Blu-ray players, which is a new format. But they default, and they will play standard Blu-rays, and they'll play standard DVDs.
Right.
But these new players in 2018 also support Dolby Vision. They had promised the firmware updates were coming, and now they're shipping with it. The question is, how many titles out there can you buy on plastic that are not only 4K, but Dolby Vision as well? Precious few.
I'm sure.
So streaming is still your best bet for 4K HDR.
For HDR content. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, when we have more to report on this, I'm sure you will let us know. We will talk more about it. And it sounds like in the meantime, like, if you really want this to happen and you did buy a new TV, that maybe it's time to buy a new majigger that you hook to the TV so that you can get the support for this stuff. Does that sound about right? You got to make sure you're doing the right dance of peripherals.
Yeah. Yeah. Planning is important. It's almost like system design. You just can't go out and buy a TV anymore and plug it in.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for telling us about that today, John. And thank you for being on the show with me.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
And Andrew, thanks for showing up today and attending HDR school with me as John gave us all the information that we needed about that. So I look forward to having you on the show when you talk about the new TV that you bought that has 4K and HDR and all of this. So thanks for being on the show with me. This has been the Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast for Wednesday, December 5th, 2018. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to you tomorrow. And until then, remember, it's kind of fun to do the impossible.